Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest, and I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally on KU Band Radio at Telstar 5, and in more than 70 countries worldwide on the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit my webpage at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law news and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on the Mark of the Beast right after this message. Well, people call the law school regularly and they ask how they can learn more about the topics that I speak on over the air. Well, every topic that I cover on the air, I teach in detail in one of my classes. These classes are tailored for busy people in every walk of life, people just like you. For example, when you hear me talk about the origin of the common law, how is the common law applicable today? How do we use the common law in court, on the street, at home, or at work? Where did it come from? And of what value is it now in the 21st century? Well, the common law is important because it affects your status, and your status is how you're being taxed. And it's important because it affects your property, or your lack of property. And this common law lesson is the first of 46 lessons in my tax and status school, for which I have three basic goals. The first is to help you stay out of jail. Second, let's see if we can help you save your assets. And third, let's see if we can't help you solve your tax problem once and for all time. Now, if you want to live your life peaceably and be left alone, this tax and status class is for you. And you've heard me say it many times. I'm one of the few guys in America that is not complaining about the IRS, the EPA, or the State Tax Commission. Why don't you call, write, or wire George Gordon and ask for my free general law CD package. And I'll show you why the common law is so important to you and in so many different ways. Now, for more information about my tax and status school, just call and order my free general law CD package. That's a four-hour commentary on the law in general. It's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining, and best of all, it's free of charge, and you can call right now to order yours. The number, 417-273-4967. Remember, my tax and status school is also available on compact disc for adult home study. If you're online, you can go to the website georgegordon.org, click onto the email machine, and send me an email request for your free general law CD package. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, or call direct 417-273-4967. Well, we've been talking about the various and sundry technological innovations that are headed toward this thing in Bible prophecy called the Mark of the Beast. And we've taken a look at a few of these off of the Internet. Here's another one. Let me show you wetware, technology meets biology, news, research, ideas, and philosophy. Brain-machine interfaces, what and when, DARPA. Well, DARPA is the U.S. Department of Defense research arm, and they have, for quite some time, been running a brain-machine interface program. This project first caught my attention when Technology Review wrote about mind-machine merger in the May edition. Brain-machine interfaces are among my favorite subjects in the wetware realm. The potential of BMI, that's the brain-machine interfaces, we'll call it BMI, is incredible if it is as well implemented, but it also opens a Pandora's box of interesting philosophical and even more so ethical questions. BMIs, that's the brain-machine interfaces from DARPA. Now remember, we talked about this last time. It's one thing to be talking about these mind control or brain control or rat control or a robo-rat when you're dealing with animals. But, you know, it's just a step from Dolly the sheep, you know, cloning sheep to cloning humans. So you know the cloning of humans is right on the horizon, and just because we don't do it in the United States doesn't mean we're not going to do it in France or India or North Korea or someplace else. It's just a matter of time. And DARPA, as soon as they catch on to this technology, this robo-rat over here, they'll be experimenting with humans. They'll be going down to Guantanamo Bay and taking some of those Afghanis over there and experimenting on them. Hey, if you think that's too far-fetched, we've been experimenting on blacks in the United States. Yeah, remember the blacks there in North Carolina that we gave syphilis to experiment on? Hey, remember the people out at St. George, Utah that we were experimenting on with the nuclear fallout from Nevada? I mean, you know, it's just, if you can experiment on American citizens, surely you can experiment on prisoners of war, for crying out loud. Thus, brain-machine interfaces are among my favorite subjects, he says. BMIs have been around in science fiction for decades. Movies like Total Recall, Johnny Mnemonic, Strange Days, and The Matrix are just a few examples. With a revolution in brain imaging technologies around 1990, brain research took a big leap forward, and in the late 90s, we started seeing some implementations of BMIs. Most memorable, the quadriplegic Jim Jaytich, who could control a cursor on a computer screen with thought alone. Jaytich later went on to use the same interface to control his so-called freehand system. That's a system that stimulates and choreographs paralyzed muscles to make use of paralyzed limbs and is usually controlled using a shoulder-controlled joystick. After some serious training, Jaytich was able to use this combination to use his arms, to use a fork, and drink from a glass unassisted. Other interesting BMIs include connecting to a rat brain's pleasure area. Scientists have trained rats to be remote controlled. The rat must be thinking. Stephen Potter's robot controlled by neurons from a rat's brain. This brain controls the robot and receives feedback from its mechanical body by way of electrodes that connect to the neurons. And under DARPA's aforementioned program, among other things, a BMI that aims to shorten fighter pilots' response times and another that will enable mind-only control of rescue robots in harsh conditions. Now, these are all very interesting projects, but I guess you're already onto some of the ethical issues. Now, if we can control a rat this way, well, is it going to lead to technology that allows us to control people to the same extent as well? Are robots with biological brains living creatures and should therefore be treated differently? To what extent can the military integrate its technology with a fighter pilot or a soldier in the field to enhance his or her abilities? Can the soldier deny, or is it just a standard part of his equipment? Now, the projects mentioned above are all rather crude, and there is without doubt quite some time until we'll see BMIs in mainstream use. But you know, I got to ask you this question here. Let me interject this. You know, it was only 3, 4, 5 years ago that we were talking about Dolly the cloned sheep. Now we're talking about cloning humans. What do you think is going to be the mainstream about the year 2020? You know, give us another 15 years. We'll be cloning humans, and we will be using mind control on people because it's going to be logical and it's going to be necessary. People are going to accept a microchip implant in their right hand and their forehead because it'll be logical and it'll be necessary. I mean, after all, who would want to deny quadriplegics or paraplegics or people with neurological diseases or dysfunctions, I guess we should say, the opportunity to regain some of that physical motion back? Can you see the heartstrings that we're talking about? It's the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. You know, once you partake of it, the genie's out of the jar. If, during World War II, the United States of America had not developed nuclear weapons, you can rest assured the Russians would have. Now, how would you like it if the Russians had nuclear weapons and America didn't? You see, the same thing is true with cloning, the same thing is true here with the Mark of the Beast. If we don't do it, somebody else is going to. I mean, that's the realities of life. But now that the genie's out of the jar and America has nuclear weapons, Russia, China, North Korea, France, England, Pakistan, and India, You know, you've got a bunch of genies out of the jar. The Pakistanis and the Indians hate each other, and when one of them one of these days drops a nuke on the other, how is that going to affect the United States? And Israel has the bomb. What's going to happen when somebody detonates one of those suitcase nukes that's a loose cannon on the ship in downtown Tel Aviv? Don't you think those Jews are going to come unhinged and drop a nuke or two on Riyadh or Baghdad or somebody just in retaliation? Now I tell you, boys and girls, we live in exciting times. And now we're on the verge of what we discussed last time in Genesis chapter 11. Remember, Genesis 11, 6. God Almighty Himself said, nothing will be restrained from them. Nothing. He didn't say, most won't be. You know, we've got minds like the Creator of the universe. We have minds like God. We're the only creatures on planet Earth that can do what we do. Dolphins and whales, they say, are intelligent. Okay, but dolphins and whales aren't making nuclear weapons and are not making BMIs. They're not talking about cloning some other species. They're not dealing with genetically modified organisms. We humans are tampering with the very foundation blocks of creation itself. We are holding ourselves out to be gods. We are acting like we are God. We actually believe it. We believe that we have evolved from green slime and that we're the highest form of life in the universe. And if there's anything higher in brain power or higher form of life in the universe, we don't know about it and we don't want to find out. Now, let's take this JTIC as an example. And what's being done here is not reading his thoughts as he thinks move the arm. What's happened is that JTIC has practiced to be able to control a certain type of brainwave that emits electronic signals. These signals are then recorded from the scalp as so-called electroencephalograms, called EEGs. The state of real thought reading technologies is nowhere really. But it's a correspondence on a /dot discussion thread on related matters, but the state of this art, quite nicely, at the moment, it's a massively non-trivial task to tell if monkeys are looking at black or white. Do you think a computer could tell the difference between two basic thoughts? Now, this is an almost two-year-old comment, but there is no sign that it is not still fully applicable. Now, we may be in the beginning stages, but, you know, 20, 30, 40 years from now, when this technology is developed in the same way that we have developed nuclear technology, we're going to have a real problem on our hands, don't you think? Now, how about toward a brain internet link? Brain internet link. A few weeks ago, I was brushing my teeth and trying to remember who made La Bamba, a big hit back in the late 1950s. I knew the singer had died in a plane crash with Buddy Holly. If I'd been downstairs, I would have gone straight to Google, but even if I'd had a spoken language internet interface in the bathroom, my mouth was full of toothpaste, and I realized that what I really want is an implant in my head. Now, this is an editorial. The Future of Computing by Rodney Brooks. Now here's what Brooks thinks. Directly coupled into my brain providing a wireless internet connection. Is it possible for us to hook up to the internet? Now remember what God said? He said nothing that they have imagined will be restrained from them. Now you know when people start imagining things, you know, the next thing is to develop technology. You know, we imagined that we could develop nuclear energy. We imagined that we could fly airplanes. And you know, one day, somebody went out there and developed an airplane. And when the Wright brothers opened the door to powered flight, it was in 1903. 20 years later, powered flight, you know, was a pretty well-established event, wasn't it? In just 20 years. Imagine this technology in just 20 years. From today. Think about it. Stand by. You're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. You know, marriage is a state-licensed business. It's a three-party limited general partnership between you, your spouse, and the state. And like any other state-licensed enterprise, it is regulated by the Welfare Department, the Department of Family Services, and the Family Court. And the best part about it all is this. You have no input into it, or say-so over, either the marriage, divorce, dissolution, custody, alimony, child support, protective custody, or restraining orders. But you get to pay for all of it. And if you fail to pay, you go to jail. Now, marriage is the single most important and expensive contract that you can engage in. And it's more binding and costly than your military enlistment or your 30-year home mortgage. And you probably know a whole lot less about it than you do your military obligation or your house payments. And 67% of all marriages, that's 2 out of 3, end in divorce in the United States. But whether you're a husband or a wife, you do have rights, privileges, and immunities to advance, to protect, or to defend against any breach of this marriage contract. That's why I contend that you ought to know and understand the terms of your marriage contract long before you marry. And you should write that contract instead of letting the state write it for you. Now, whether you're married or not, why don't you write for my free general law CD package and let me share some vital information with you about the law and this marriage contract. To do that, just call direct 417-273-4967. Be sure to ask for the 2004 schedule and the free CD set at the same time. Now, that's a 4-hour commentary on the Gordon Law School. Remember, it's entertaining, educational, it's informative. Best of all, it's free of charge, and you can order yours right now, if you're online, by simply going to the website georgegordon.org. That's an easy one to remember, georgegordon.org. Click onto the email machine and send me an email in order to receive your free general law CD package. Now, you can either send that email, georgegordon.org, or call direct 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about the mark of the beast. And this mark of the beast is intertwined with Social Security. Social Security is the means by which 200 governments around the world identify their citizens. You probably have one. It is surprising, though, that in the United States, 14 million of us do not have Social Security numbers. Many of the Amish, Mennonites, and other religious groups, including yours truly, George Gordon, do not have a Social Security number. Now, I used to have one, and I had to rescind mine. My son, Dirk, has never had one. He's 42 years old, never had a Social Security number in his life. I'm 65. I had one until, this was 1984, and I rescinded in 1984. I've been living my life from that day forward without the mark of the beast. If, in fact, that is the mark of the beast. During the 1930s, many preachers, many ministers thought that Social Security was the mark of the beast. I think now, after having looked at it for 60 years, I think it's exactly true, correct, and on point. I think that's exactly what it is. But there are a number of technological developments that are occurring because Revelation 13:16 says that this mark is going to be in your right hand and or in your forehead. And that requires some technology. You know, when I was a kid, that was impossible. I mean, we could tattoo it. You know, Hitler was tattooing numbers on people's arms. We used to think, you know, the mark of the beast will be some dictatorial world-ruling government, and they'll tattoo it on our arms. Oh, it's much more sophisticated than that. This little grain of rice-sized microchip implanted in your hand with RFID technology is going to be hooked to global positioning satellites, GPS, so that you'll be identifiable anywhere you stand on planet Earth. It'll have your medical history. It'll have all of your financial records. It'll have your work history, your criminal history and identification, and it'll be all yours. And it'll be so logical. Everybody will line up to get one. It will eliminate this thing of identity theft. And it will eliminate money. We'll have the cashless society. We will have the perfect George Orwell 1984. It isn't coming by 1984. George Orwell was a little bitten, you know, behind the times there when he thought 1984. It'll probably be more like, 2034 when this event transpires. It could occur before then, I suppose, but I was kind of hoping that I'd live long enough to see it. I'm getting to be too old now, and I may not. I'll die and go into a hole in the ground. I'll be pushing up daisies when this happens, but perhaps you, up here in your 20s or 30s, listening to me tonight, you may actually live to see this happen. It'll be an event like Noah's flood, because Matthew 24 said so. Jesus of Nazareth said there's never been a time like it, this thing called the Great Tribulation, never before and never again. And he likened it to Noah's flood. He said it'll be just like the time of Noah's flood when people were marrying and giving in marriage. And he said when it occurs, it'll be a surprise to everybody. So if you're looking for, you know, headlines in USA Today, you're going to be disappointed. He said it's going to come like a thief in the night. It comes like the story of the 10 virgins. You know, when it comes, 5 of them aren't prepared and 5 of them are. You're either ready for it or you're not. Now, Rodney Brooks wrote this toward a brain internet link. A thought-activated Google search isn't so far out. Medical and military research will drive rapid advances in neural interfaces. And in my line of work, an effective brain-computer interface is a perennial vision. But I'm starting to think that by 2020, we might actually have wireless internet interfaces that ordinary people will feel comfortable having implanted in their heads, in your forehead. Just as ordinary people are today comfortable with going to the mall to have laser eye surgery. All the signs, early experimental successes, societal demand for improved health care and military research thrusts point in that direction. Remote-controlled rats are perhaps the most stunning evidence of this trend. Last year, John Chapin and his colleagues at the State University of New York's Downstate Medical Center in Brooklyn reported installing brain implants that stimulate areas of the rat cortex where signals are normally received from the whiskers. Left-right cues from a laptop computer made the rats feel as if their whiskers had brushed into obstacles, prompting them to turn in the appropriate directions to impel the rats up difficult inclines. A second implant stimulated pleasure centers in their brains. Now, this experiment built on the 1999 efforts of Chapin and Miguel Nicolaus at Duke University that enabled rats to mentally induce a robot arm to release water. First, a computer recorded the patterns of neural firing in key areas of the rat's brains when the rodents pressed a lever that controlled the robot arm. Once the computer learned the neural pattern associated with lever pushing, it moved the robot arm when it detected the rats merely thinking about doing so. In later versions of this technology, monkeys were able to control a more sophisticated robot arm as though it were their own arm. Machine neuron connections are working in people too. Thousands of once deaf people can understand conversations thanks to cochlear implants. A tiny microphone in the ear picks up sound, and a small package of electronics translates this into direct stimulation of neurons in the cochlea, I guess that's C-O-C-H-L-E-A, cochlea. More recently, there have been reports of human trials in which comparable, though much more crude in their early stage, visual implants enabled blind patients to perceive something of their surroundings. Now we're talking about the bionic man. You know, 25 years ago when the bionic man was on television, you know, it was Jules Verne, it was Flash Gordon, it was Fantasyland. Today, boys and girls, Revelation 13 is coming to life right in front of our eyeballs. And a handful of quadriplegic patients have neural implants that let them control computers by thinking about moving particular muscles. Now, why am I so confident that brain internet interfaces will become a reality? Because it's not really such a vast leap from here to a thought-activated Google search. These human-tested technologies already give us the components that we would need to directly connect the internet to a person's brain. And I want to point this out, ladies and gentlemen. If we don't do it here in America, you can rest assured that the North Koreans are going to do it. You can rest assured the Chinese, the Russians, the Germans, the French, or somebody else is going to do it. Can you imagine the disadvantage that the United States of America will be at or in if the Chinese develop this technology ahead of us? It would be as stunning as nuclear armaments. I can remember when the Russians sent up Sputnik. Boy, did that send shockwaves through America. A technological first by a foreign power. And if this is used against us, can you imagine a rat with a microphone? The imaginary fly on the wall sitting in the president's cabinet room listening to and recording the president's cabinet meetings? I mean, you know, we're getting to a point in time where Genesis 11:6 isn't as crazy as it might have sounded 100 years ago. And it was God himself that said, nothing will be restrained from them. Human beings are very clever. Now, because there are both medical and military pulls on related technologies on the medical side, besides the urgency of providing physical and mental prostheses to patients with severe injuries, baby boomers are getting older and their nervous systems are starting to fall apart. And there will be increased demand for patching up deteriorating nervous subsystems, and baby boomers have always gotten what they demand. At a minimum, this will drive the development of direct visual interfaces that by 2010 will help blind people as much as today's cochlear implants help deaf people. And on the military side, direct neural control of complex machines is a long-term goal. The U.S. Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, that's DARPA, has a brain-machine interface program aimed at creating next-generation wireless interfaces between neural systems and initially prosthetics and other biomedical devices. All right, now, I can remember 25, 30 years ago, computers were around, but, you know, they weren't for Joe Sixpack. Today, not only does Joe Sixpack have a computer, he has things, you know, that now, looking back on it, make our computers and our 8-track stereo systems in our cars back in the 60s look silly, don't they? And the other day I was riding with my driver, went out to Reno and came back. And I'm not this technologically advanced, but my driver has a new cell phone. I mean, it's about the size of a donut. Maybe not even as big as a donut. And he could call. Now, we received about, I'd say 10 calls in a 2-week trip. And we probably made 10 calls. Not a single call was less than perfectly crystal clear. Anywhere we called on the road. We called in Nevada. We received calls in Nevada. We called, and I can remember a time when you had one of these phones. Why, half the time you couldn't make connections. You'd be driving down the road, and it just cuts out because you're out of, you know, you drive down in a valley. It didn't make any difference if we were on top of a hill or down in a valley. You talk about technology now. We're getting better and better and more sophisticated with our technology. And when the military gets interested in something like DARPA, you can rest assured that they're going to put it into operation for military purposes. Remember what I said? It makes sense. The genie's out of the jar. It makes sense. And the mark of the beast, which is the technology that all of this is leading to, makes all the sense in the world. Everybody in the world is going to need a cellular telephone. Everyone in the world is going to have one. Everyone in the world is going to have the mark of the beast. Except for a few odd iconoclasts, which we'll cover in the next segment. And I'll describe some of these iconoclasts for you and what Bible prophecy has to say about people who voluntarily receive this thing called the mark of the beast. Stand by. You're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Hey, are you concerned about your privacy? Well, how much does your government know about you anyway, and how much do you want your government to know about you? Well, believe it or not, government only knows as much about you as you tell them about yourself. And everything that government, industry, or business knows about you is because you told them. Now, the Fourth Amendment protects you when your person, houses, papers, and effects, but it doesn't protect you from yourself. Now, can we have privacy in the computer age? Well, you bet we can. And that's because information is gathered and stored in a very reasoned and logical manner for later retrieval and use. And it's knowing how this information is gathered and what information is stored. And what information it is that you want to keep personal and private. That's what actually puts you in the driver's seat in your quest for privacy. So always keep in mind that no one knows anything about you that you haven't revealed by your own hand or by your own mouth. Now, if you'd like to learn more about privacy and privacy issues, why don't you call and ask for my free general law CD package? Remember, that's a 4-hour program. It's entertaining, it's informative, it's educational. Best of all, it's free. Now, just call the school here at area code 417-273-4967 and order yours. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. If you're online, go to the webpage georgegordon.org. Click onto the email machine and send me an email request for your free general law CD package. Again, that's georgegordon.org or call direct 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about the mark of the beast. Now, remember the mark of the beast mentioned in Revelation 13, 100 years, 200 years, 500 years ago, was a far-out vision that came from John, the Apostle John, in a time when he couldn't possibly have understood what he was writing. When he wrote this book of Revelation, he couldn't understand what a scorpion or what a locust or a scorpion with a tail that stung. What he was really describing is an Apache helicopter today, or a Black Hawk helicopter. And he couldn't have understood what he was writing, but today in our modern technological society, we can read the book of Revelation and all of a sudden it starts to come to life. It comes to life. And this thing called the mark of the beast has a life of its own. Just as the modern laptop was inconceivable when the standard computer interface was the punch card, it's hard to imagine how a brain internet interface will feel. As brain imaging technologies continue their rapid advance, we will get a better understanding of where in the brain to insert these signals so that they'll be meaningful. Just as the control signals for the rats were inserted into neurons normally triggered by whiskers. And we'll need broad advances, of course. We need algorithms that can track the behavior of brain cells as they adapt to the interface, and we'll need better understanding of brain regions that serve as centers of meaning. But we'll get there. Just give us time. And when we do, we won't see an image similar to today's web pages. Rather, the information contained in a web server will make us feel as though Richie Valens just popped into our head. Rodney Brooks is director of MIT's Computer Science and Artificial Intelligence Laboratory. Well, let's take a look at this thing called the Mark of the Beast. I mentioned to you Revelation 13:16, but it requires that we code plead it out. If you'll remember, I've mentioned this before, the Bible is written in code. So if you just took Revelation 13:16, of and by itself, out of context, it doesn't mean near as much as it does when we put all the scriptures together. So if you got a pen and paper, I'll give you the citations. And then I'll just read them to you in context, and then let's see where we go. Remember, we start with Isaiah 28:9-13. And that little ditty tells us the code, where God tells us, I'm going to speak to you with stammering lips and another tongue. And the reason I'm doing that is so that you cannot understand what I'm telling you. Now, you know, most Christians, they believe that the Bible is written so that they can understand it. In fact, most Christians believe they understand it. They've got the straight skinny. Well, if you'll take Isaiah 28:9-13, and then you correlate that with Correlate that with Matthew 13 first. So Isaiah 28, 9 through 13 correlates with Matthew 13, the parable of the sower, where Jesus asks, or his disciples ask this question. Verse 10, his disciples came and said to him, "Why do you speak to these people in parables? Why are you talking to them in parables?" Now listen to Jesus' answer. He said in verse 11, he said unto them, "Because it's given to you to know the mystery of the kingdom of heaven, but to them it's not given. And in them is fulfilled," in verse 14, "in them is fulfilled the prophecy of Isaiah, which says, 'By hearing you shall hear, and you shall not understand, and seeing you shall see, and you shall not perceive.'" And that's a direct citation from Isaiah 6, 9 through 13. Alright. So the Bible's written in code. And that's because the Bible is a law book. All law books are written in code. That's why we call it the United States Code Annotated, or Vernon's Annotated Code of Missouri. Law is written in code. Now, what is a code? A code is a secret message. A code is a secret message that nobody can understand except the sender and the receiver. That's the purpose behind it. So when you crack the code, when you break the code, now you're privy to the information that only the sender and receiver should be privy to. So God wrote the Bible in code so that only a certain few people could understand it. Who can understand it? All right, well, Daniel gives us the answer. It's in Daniel chapter 12. Now, Daniel was a prophet. He's called a minor prophet. But in Daniel chapter 12, verse 4, it says, "But thou, O Daniel, shut up the words and seal the book even to the time of the end. Many shall run to and fro, and knowledge shall be increased." In verse 9, he said, "Go your way, Daniel, for the words are closed up and sealed till the time of the end. Many shall be purified and made white and tried, but the wicked shall do wickedly, and none of the wicked shall understand, but the wise shall understand." Alright, so all you wicked people out there can turn the radio off because you can't understand this. But the wise can understand it. Well, who are these people who are wise? How do you get to be one of these wise guys? You want to have understanding, you go to the book of Proverbs. Now, the book of Proverbs is aimed at somebody who wants wisdom. So God comes along, the Proverbs of Solomon. This is Proverbs chapter 1, verse 1. "The Proverbs of Solomon, the son of David, king of Israel, to know wisdom and instruction, to perceive the words of understanding, to receive the instruction of wisdom, justice, and judgment, and equity, to give subtlety to the simple, and to the young man knowledge and discretion. Now a wise man will hear, and he will increase learning. And a man of understanding shall attain unto wise counsels. To understand a proverb and the interpretation, the words of the wise and their dark sayings." All right, now here's the key. Verse 7. "The fear of the eternal is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and instruction." Now let's flip over to Psalm 111, verse 10. And that'll give us the key to understanding. 111:10. Here it is. "The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and a good understanding have all they who do His commandments." The opposite to that is, well, a poor understanding of all they who do not do His commandments. So you take a look at all these preachers out here that are telling you that the law of God is abolished and done away with. Nailed to the cross with Jesus. I asked a guy one time, "Does that mean I can take your wife home and sleep with her?" Hey, he didn't think that was very funny. I'm not quite sure as I understand that I understand how these Christians reason and think. The law is abolished and done away and nailed with the cross, or nailed to the cross. But when you say, "I'm going to take your wife home and sleep with her," they say, "Well, that law hasn't been abolished or done away with." Well, good, let me steal your lawnmower. No, that law hasn't been done away with. It seems like they want to sleep with my wife and steal my lawnmower, but if I want to sleep with their wives and steal their lawnmowers, they take a dark view of that. So I'm not quite sure how Christians justify or logically construe the Ten Commandments, but they are convinced that they're abolished, nailed to the cross, and done away with. But if you want to have wisdom and understanding, God tells you exactly the opposite. A good understanding of all they who do His commandments. Now let's take a couple more looks here, and we'll get to this thing of the code pleading the mark of the beast. Over here in 1 John, get over here to 1 John. Now there's this same guy, John. This pretty prolific writer, John is. John wrote the Gospel of John, then he wrote 1st, 2nd, and 3rd John, then he wrote the book of Revelation. Well, in 1st John 3, 4, 1st John chapter 3, verse 4, whosoever commits sin transgresses also the law, for sin is the transgression of the law. And you hear these religious guys are constantly talking about, they're talking about sin and wickedness. You know, that's sin. Wait a minute. If the law has been nailed to the cross with Jesus, taken out of the way, it was a schoolmaster and now it's abolished, there can't be any sin. Can there? How can you have sin? How can you have a transgression of a law that's been repealed? You know, think about it. We used to have a time in America when we had prohibition. Can you remember that? Prohibition. 18th Amendment. And it banned booze constitutionally in the United States. Then we repealed the 18th Amendment and we brought booze back. Well, you know, bootlegging is still against the law, but drinking isn't. So you can go out and buy a drink today. Now, that law has been repealed, so that law has been taken out of the way. Now, you listen to the Christians and they tell you, well, the law has been taken out of the way. It's done away with. We're under the law of love now. So what is love? Well, I think to most people, love is going to bed with Bridget Bardot, or love is going to bed, you know, and having sex with Britney Spears. Isn't it? Isn't that what love is? In 1 John 2, 3, and hereby we do know that we know Him if we keep His commandments. And he that saith, I know Him, and keepeth not His commandments, is a liar, and the truth is not in him. Now here's God telling us that hereby we do know that we know Him, that is God. We know God if we keep His commandments. Well, the average Christian on the street is not keeping the commandments of God. Let's take a look at 1 John 5, verses 2 and 3. By this we know that we love the children of God when we love God and keep His commandments. For this is the love of God. You want to know what the definition of love is from the Bible? It's right here, 1 John 5, 3. For this is the love of God, that we keep His commandments, and His commandments are not grievous. The law that says thou shalt not commit adultery is not a grievous law. The law that says thou shalt not steal is not a grievous law. Now, if you want to understand this, then we have to code plead it out. It's written in code. The people who will understand this are the people that obey God and keep His commandments. The people who do not obey God and keep His commandments can't understand it. That's why it's written in code. I had a student one time, he came in and he said, you know, Gordon, I was better off before I ever met you. And I said, why do you say that, Dennis? And he said, well, you see, I'm a Catholic, and I was not responsible for my actions. Now that you have explained the law to me, now I'm responsible for my actions. And I said, yeah, Dennis, but while you're responsible for your actions, you now have opened to you the prospects of the first resurrection, rulership over the nations and eternal life. First resurrection, rulership over the nations and eternal life. The three benefits that you can achieve under the new covenant that the old covenant people didn't have a shot at. Now, we're ready. We'll take a break here, and when we come back from the break, we'll take a look at the mark of the beast, and I'll show you all of the citations on the mark right after this. All right, you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. You know, we Americans today are interrogated, watched, measured, and counted more than at any time in our history. Surveillance and electronic record keeping of nearly every routine activity, from bank deposits to medical visits, has produced greater efficiency and security, all right. but it's also responsible for a very discernible erosion of our ability to live our lives free from outside scrutiny. The federal government today currently maintains an average of 15 files on every American, and that's according to estimates by the Office of Management and Budget. And closer to home, state and local governments use computers to keep their own files on us. Now, a study conducted by the New York Committee on Open Government found that the state of New York and its agencies operated 1,776 separate data systems containing 10,799 categories of information about New York residents. And every one of those systems contained between 2 and 10 million records. Now, all of this information about you is gained from 63 sources, and this information is gathered and stored in a very reasoned and logical manner for later retrieval and use. Now, would you like to know how government, banking, insurance, business, and industry obtains all of this information? What are their sources? How is it stored? How is it retrieved? What do they want it for? Well, knowing how this information is gathered and what information is stored and what information you want to keep personal and private actually puts you in the driver's seat in your quest for privacy. Now, for more information about privacy and privacy issues, why don't you call me, 417-273-4967. Be sure to ask for my free general law CD package, and I'll tell you how to train yourself to be just as personal and private as you want to be. Remember, it's educational, informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free of charge, and you can order yours by simply calling 417-273-4967. If you're online, go to the email and send me an email request. That's georgegordon.org. Click onto the email machine. Send me an email. Ask for the free general law CD package. Remember, that's georgegordon.org. Or call direct 417-273-4967. All right, we're ready. Get your pen and paper out, sharpen your pencil on both ends, and listen to this. The first place we went to was Revelation 13:15-18. Remember this. It says, he had power to give life to the image of the beast, and that the image of the beast should both speak and cause that as many as would not worship the image of the beast should be killed. And he causes all, both small and great, rich and poor, free and bond, to receive a mark in their right hand or in their foreheads. And that no man might buy or sell save he that had the mark or the name of the beast or the number of his name. Now here is wisdom. Let him that has understanding count the number of the beast, for it is the number of a man, and his number is 666. All right, remember, if you want understanding, you go to the book of Proverbs. We cited that one, Proverbs 1:1-7. Then we went to Daniel. Daniel wanted some information. Now flip over to Revelation 14, starting in verse 8-12. That's Revelation 14:8-12. Here's the mark of the beast again. Let's see what this tells us. And there followed another angel, saying, Babylon is fallen, that great city, because she made all nations drink of the wine of the wrath of her fornication. And the third angel followed them, saying with a loud voice, if any man worship the beast and his image and receive his mark in his forehead or in his hand, the same shall drink of the wine of the wrath of God, which is poured out without mixture into the cup of his indignation, and he shall be tormented with fire and brimstone in the presence of the holy angels and in the presence of the Lamb. And the smoke of their torment ascends up forever and ever, and they have no rest day or night, who worship the beast and his image, and whosoever receives the mark of his name. This mark of the beast. This mark of the beast. That's pretty heavy-duty stuff there, wouldn't you say? And then in verse 12, here is the patience of the saints, and here are they that keep the commandments of God and the faith of Jesus. All right, now did you notice? You have these people with the mark of the beast, and they receive punishment. And the people who don't have the mark of the beast, they have the patience of the saints. And this word patience now is a code word for commandment keepers. You'll see that in Revelation 3:10. Because you have kept the word of my patience, I also will keep you from the hour of temptation which shall come upon all the world to try them that dwells upon the earth. Now, the great tribulation is coming. You got you get 90% of Bible prophecy, which is aimed at this period of time called the Great Tribulation. You're witnessing in your newspapers today. You're seeing it on the internet. You're seeing it in the news. This thing called the Mark of the Beast makes all the sense in the world. Theft, you know, identity theft. We're gonna stop that. Pretty shortly now, the economy is going to collapse worldwide. That'll give us the necessity to move from this economic crisis, from gold and silver, from money, from paper, to a debt credit system in which you'll have no money, no currency, and everybody will have this mark in their hand, this grain of rice, this chip. I tell you, it's going to make sense. You'll need it. You'll need it so that you can buy, sell, and trade. But keep in mind that there is a group of people out here that don't have it, don't want it, and are avoiding it like AIDS, herpes, and VD, and I'm one of those. All right, now that was in Revelation 14. Let's take a look now at Revelation 14, 9 through 11. And the third angel followed them, saying with a loud voice, if any man worships the beast in his image, worship, that is, obeys the law of the United States. Christians, boy, they're hot and heavy on obeying the law of the United States. I was walking up the road, I was going up to the post office the other day, and one of my neighbors saw me walking, and she stopped, and she said, oh, Mr. Gordon, it's such a hot day, get in the car. And I got in the car, and she wouldn't move until I buckled my seatbelt. I mean, she was just adamant, you got to buckle your seatbelt, Mr. Gordon. So I buckled my seatbelt and she drove me off. Now, she's very excited about obeying the law of Missouri. I'll bet you this woman wouldn't give a rat's rectum to obey the law of God. In verse 11 here, and the smoke of their torment. This is where these concepts, these religious concepts of an ever-burning hell fire, you know, if you're a bad boy, you go into hell and burn forever. That's another story for another day. That's another fiction that comes from a religion. But then the smoke of their torment ascends up forever and ever. And they have no rest night or day who worship the beast and his image and whosoever receives the mark of his name. On whatever this bad stuff is, whether you think it's hell, fire, and brimstone, or you think it's the lake of fire where you get thrown in, get burned up. Now that's kind of pretty heavy duty stuff, and that's the people that have this thing called the mark of the beast. The people who receive this grain of rice in their hand or in their forehead so that they can buy, sell, and trade are the ones that get punished by God. By the way, don't get mad at me. I'm just code pleading this out for you so that you can see. Now remember, when you code plead this out, you just take this mark. I looked up the word mark here in the concordance, and it was in there about six or eight times in the book of Revelation. So it appears in Revelation 13, 16. And then you'll see it in Revelation 13, 16 through 18. And then in Revelation 14, 9 through 11. And Revelation 15, 2. So in Revelation 15, 2, it comes out, and I saw as it were a sea of glass mingled with fire, and them that had gotten the victory over the beast and over his image and over his mark. These are people who got the victory over the mark of the beast and over the number of his name, stand on the sea of glass, having the harps of God. And it goes on to describe, you know, what they're going to be doing there. These are people that come up in the first resurrection, receive eternal life, rulership over the nations, and reign with Christ 1,000 years. And I'll show you that. Now turn to Revelation 16:2, and the first went and poured out his vial upon the earth, and there fell a noisome and grievous sore upon the men which had the mark of the beast, and upon them which worshipped his image. So when the tribulation comes down, God will protect those that don't have the mark of the beast, those that obey God and keep his commandments. I think that's going to exclude most Christians. Don't you? No, I didn't write this. I just wanted to suggest to you that... See, most Christians don't obey God and keep His commandments. Now, there's a few that do, but most of them don't. All right, flip over to Revelation 19:20, and it says, "The beast was taken, and with him the false prophet that wrought miracles before him, with which he deceived them that had received the mark of the beast and them that worshipped his image. These both were cast alive into a lake of fire burning with brimstone." It doesn't say that you're going to go to hell, fire, and burn for eternity. It says that these two guys, the false prophet and the beast, are going to be thrown into a lake burning with fire and brimstone. Let's picture this. Let's take you up on top of a volcano and throw you in to a molten vat of lava. Just how long do you think you're going to live in there? I'd say just about 5 seconds, just ought to burn you to a crisp, shouldn't it? Then finally, in Revelation 20, verse 4, "And I saw thrones, and they sat upon them, and judgment was given unto them. And I saw the souls of them that were beheaded for the witness of Jesus and for the word of God, and which had not worshipped the beast, and neither his image, neither had received his mark upon their foreheads or in their hands. And they lived and reigned with Christ 1,000 years. So all of the people that come up in the first resurrection who are living in this time and age, now there's going to be, if you take a look at Hebrews 11, the resurrection chapter, you'll see a bunch of people in there, David and Abraham, Isaac and Jacob and so on, that are coming up in the first resurrection. And then Paul mentions some people in I think it was 2 Thessalonians, where it talks about they are changed in a twinkling of an eye. Those are the people that are alive when the Messiah returns, and not a one of them is going to have this mark of the beast. Because if they do, they're going to be punished, and if they don't have the mark of the beast, then they're going to come up in that first resurrection and live and reign with Christ 1,000 years. Now, of course, the religious people, they've got people going to hell, and they've got people going to heaven, and they don't have anybody living and reigning with Christ 1,000 years on planet Earth. They don't have a great white throne judgment. They don't have any resurrections. And they just have immortal souls with eternal life going to heaven or going to hell. So here's the story then of the mark of the beast. And I'm not going to bore you with a lot of articles here on the mark of the beast, but I've shown you, I think, from the scriptures that the mark of the beast is something you want to avoid, like AIDS, herpes, and VD. And if you can do that, there's a benefit that comes from it. All right, you've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. And The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week and worldwide on the Internet, 365 days a year. For more information about the Gordon Law School and The Law Hour, please go to the website. That's georgegordon.org. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact disc. For more information, just go to the homeschooling page on my website at georgegordon.org. Remember, the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log, schedule, and archives. It can be accessed through my website at georgegordon.org. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. And the Gordon Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. And the Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet. And all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Hey, I'm out of time. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station, God willing. And we'll have more on the editorial review and the Law Hour. So until then, good night, friends.